Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's show, bi-monthly skip level reviews, part two. Did you know that an inexpensive Manager Tools individual license can help you when you most need it? In addition to a great tool like the interview creation tool, with individual licenses, you get an individual license to summary slideshows and detailed show notes of our 400 plus shows, ready to be printed or put on your mobile device so it's available right there when you most need it. Going into a presentation and want to review how to be effective? Well, you don't have to listen to 40 minutes or more of a podcast to refresh yourself. Just quickly scan through the show notes to refresh yourself and be the best presenter you can be. Details on individual licenses are available on the website, www.manager-tools.com. Check it out today. You won't be disappointed. All right, here we go. On with the show. Let me ask you a couple questions, though, because a lot of managers tell us, and I understand it completely, their week is completely full and their O3s are just chock full, right? It's a 30-minute,
right,
once a week meeting, and it's taking 30 minutes or 40 minutes every single week. And so is it okay to add time to our one-on-one for this? Because it seems like a lot to cover, perhaps.
Yeah, look, it's fine to have your normal one-on-one, get it done in 20, 25, maybe even full 30 minutes, and then have this session after a normal one-on-one, right? So to give you time to get through that operational stuff. I would argue that what you're saying is that's operational and this is somehow different. This is strategic, and what we want is when it comes to people and development, we want those kinds of strategic discussions to become more operational. But no, sure, you could say, look, in 3 weeks, we're going to have this meeting. I want to give you some time to get ready, and we're going to have a one-on-one that lasts an hour, okay? You can do that, and you can move a couple of one-on-ones around once every other month, or we're going to recommend once a quarter going forward.
It seems like you're caveating that. You say we could do that, but
yeah,
it doesn't sound like you're recommending we do that. That's not the standard way to do this or the recommended way to do it.
Look, if a manager is sitting out there going, I struggle to get my one-on-ones done within a half an hour, it's really hard for me to diagnose why it's a 50 or 60-minute long meeting. Some people say, I've been doing these for 3 months and they're still an hour long. And then they write us later and say, no, I finally figured it out. I just told them, hey, we need to get this done in 30 minutes. And magically, things start whittling themselves down. But I don't want to tell a manager, you've got to have your normal one-on-one. And then, by the way, you've got to get this done in the next 15 minutes or something. And you don't get to talk about what you want to talk about. And adding an extra 30 minutes once a quarter is not the end of the world. I'm amazed at the number of people who say, oh, Mark, I'm busy. I don't have half an hour once a quarter. What? Can we get somebody else in your job, please? You don't have a half an hour once a quarter? And then, of course, when I'm in a snarky mood, I say, you still watching TV, are you? Right? Are you listening to the radio in the car? Are you not on the phone with people while you're driving to and from work?
Dude, I just reached out virtually and slapped you on the forehead and said, Dark Mark, you are banished.
Yeah. This is not Dark Mark. I'm like, really? Half an hour once a quarter? You're suddenly the president of the United States? You're the prime minister? What? The problem is half an hour once a month.
These are thoughts in Mark's head. Mark doesn't actually say these things. Just to be clear.
Oh, well, I do.
You're killing me.
I'm sitting there at the end of a conference. I'm sitting there at the end of the conference. Somebody say, Mark, you're telling me I should have this half hour meeting once a quarter. I don't think I can squeeze any more time out of my calendar. And if it's the last question of the evening, I'll say, bull, you know what? Show me your calendar. And inevitably, that person has wide swaths of time. And what they say is, well, I'm doing email during those times. Oh, okay. So you're just really inefficient about something you do a lot, right? So look, you've got the half hour. You've got several hours a quarter. Most of us have 50 hours a quarter easily that we could apply. And why not apply it at things that really matter strategically? If you feel like you're down in the weeds and you can never get up and start doing the things that are important as opposed to just urgent, that's because you're doing things that are urgent and not important. And the way you make that change, you do start doing things that are important and not urgent. And it's painful. You go over the horseman curve you go over the McGuire hump with the horseman curve, and then you get to the land of milk and honey at some point. Some folks tell us that having a separate meeting sends a message that that meeting's agenda is more important than normal routine stuff. All right, look, we're not going to argue that. but we think if it's important, it's impressive that you're making it a part of your routine. That is one of the hallmarks of highly effective folks. They make the important stuff routine. It's part of their normal routine. So this is our way of saying maybe every once in a while, your part of your O3 with your directs ought not to be down in the weeds, but ought to reflect some of the big picture thoughts that you ought to be having. Step up now and become strategic rather than down in the weeds.
Right. Now, when it comes to thinking about the performance of our directs and our skips in this particular case, it's amazing to me the number of folks who just kind of approach that in a haphazard way. Okay, let's talk about your directs. And they don't really have a framework for evaluating, for comparing people. So share with me a model for doing that so that there is some kind of consistency about how I'm talking about and evaluating all my skips.
Yeah, I've got probably 50 casts to come out in the next 10, 20 years about this simple format that we call the 3 P's. You won't hear it written about everywhere else, folks. It's a manager tool specific one. It's an easy one. And the reason why it's an easy one is because I found there were two sets of behaviors among managers. In all the years I've been doing this, there are two sets of behaviors among managers and people professionals in large enough organizations where people are sitting around thinking about this stuff. And that is at one end of the spectrum, which is like 70% of the people, maybe even 80%. There is no thinking at all about systemic ways of doing this other than at annual review time. Nobody thinks about this stuff. At the other end of the spectrum is some people in HR thinking, okay, we need to use, what's the HR way of doing
it? The one thing you don't like?
Competencies. No, I'm a reformed HR hater. I don't hate HR. I hate bad HR. And there's just a lot of bad HR, right? I like good HR. I love good HR. I kiss the feet of good HR. There, I said it.
I just wrote that down. You said that.
Yeah, good. You wrote down that you kissed
35 seconds on this particular week's cast.
You wrote down that you kissed the feet of good HR. Good. I'm glad you're teaching me things, and that's a good thing. I'm glad. But look, the people in HR are thinking, well, let's make competencies the way we do things here. Every single thing we do will be connected, and we'll send out 100-page booklets that'll say for any part of any job, we can tell you exactly what to be looking for in terms of these competency sets that tell you what to look for in terms of how people think and what they do and what their emotional maturity is and so on. Like, gack, you got to be kidding me. Managers don't have time to sit in meetings to learn all the possible behavioral subsets of various categorization techniques. It's almost like you need a species and a phylum for every single thing in managerial behavior, which would suggest the entire realm of human emotions.
But all that stuff is good. It looks really good in a leather binder sitting up on your shelf. Because yeah. I have what a couple
they,
of those.
Actually. Oh, yeah. I remember when first time I ever heard it, somebody called it shelfware. Right? Yeah. I bought this thing and it's sitting on my shelf collecting dust. So we want to find a nice balance between something that people can do, it's usable, and something that has some intellectual heft. And what we lean toward at Manager Tools is stuff that doesn't have intellectual heft, not because we're against intellectualism, but rather because we know managers are too busy to be dealing with really complex stuff. So what are the three things that you want from your people? You want them to perform. You want to keep them around, right? What are the two things managers are responsible for? Results and retention. So therefore, we have performance and we have potential, which retention is a part of potential, obviously. If somebody leaves, they don't have any potential for you. And then obviously people skills, because all the performance and all the potential in the world packaged up in somebody who's a raving lunatic and a jerk and hard to be around, right? We don't tolerate that. This is Manager Tools, and there are two reasons to fire somebody. One, because they don't achieve their responsibilities. They don't achieve their goals. They fail repeatedly. And two, they're impossible to work with. They're difficult. They tear down the team. So this is an easy way. Yes, it's alliterative. I apologize for that. I didn't intend that. But it came out of my mouth once, and it makes sense to thousands of managers all over the world that have heard me coach them on it before. So let's talk about each one in a little bit more detail. Performance. Simple question. How well does this person do their job? How well do they perform against their performance metrics? Ideally, they have metrics. What objective data exists about their performance? Now, look, this is a great question, even if there are no objective data, because if there's none, this meeting is going to smoke that out. And there's a new deliverable your manager direct will have to come up with, right? Which is like, okay, dude, come up with some objectives for this person, right? How are you going to measure them at the end of the year other than saying, great team member, right? we promise you, you will be amazed if you give no more guidance than, quote, performance, unquote, to your directs, how wide their interpretation will be. You'll have somebody sit down and say, his performance is good. It's good. Really good, like an Oreo cookie or
a moon pie
or good, like top third of your team of 20 people. Right. And look, there's nothing wrong with that. It's okay. It reminds me a little bit of that story I'm sure I've told before about the architect who sent in a plan form of some buildings. I think it was for a public college or university. And when they asked him a question about it, they said, we got a problem. We don't see any sidewalks. He says, yeah, don't put any sidewalks in. Put grass everywhere, you know, that there's not streets in this area of the college. And then watch where the wear spots are in the grass, and that's where you put sidewalks, where people are going to behave, right? You don't have to have this thing perfectly worked out and having a 17-step framework and having all the right questions to ask and so on, because you will reduce it to nothing but data, and people will spend a whole lot of time creating spreadsheets in order to create the data, and they'll think that just by sending you a spreadsheet, they will have satisfied your need to learn about their directs, your skips, which is not the way you want to do it. You want to have a conversation with them to prepare your directs for the possibility that when they're an executive, they're going to have to sit down in some equivalent to a Session C meeting and say, what do you think about Bob? What do you think about Terry? What do you think about Jane? It's as simple as that. Okay?
Next.
Yeah, potential. Right? How much can this person grow? What's their ability to be useful to us 5 or 10 years down the road? Is it this job? Well, if we know that in the next 2 or 3 years, every job at their level is going to change, and this person has shown no indication of changing in the last 5 or 10 years, what are we going to do about that? Right? Are they at their limit? Are they ready now for promotion? What's the evidence for either one of those things? Right? Relatedly, and this is really important, what is their risk for loss? By the way, this, Mike, I'm sure you're feeling it too. We ought to tempt people and say one of the tools that we'll come out with for manager tools is the retention tool, right? A series of questions about people's performance and about their risk for loss, and then plotting that and then knowing better, okay, particularly if you know their DISC model, how to help retain people.
Perfect. So now that we've all released the interview creation tool, so you want to create more pressure on me. So now I can get emails from people asking, where is the retention tool? Thanks.
Appreciate
that.
Yeah, I love creating pressure. It's a good thing. It's not me, by the way. It's the thousands. It's the hundreds of thousands of managers listening to us saying we need more tools.
Yeah. It's you stress, not distress, right?
Yeah, exactly. Of course, those same people are saying we'd like a cast every day.
Right. There you go.
So you've got to understand people's risk for loss, because even if their performance is high and their potential is high, the moment they decide to leave the company, they have no potential at the company. I don't want to know what potential they have to be Prime Minister of Great Britain or United Kingdom. I really don't care about that. I care about their potential to help us achieve our goals. And then lastly, the third point is people skills. Just because I'll tell you, when I first started out, I simply went at performance and potential. And pretty quickly, I realized we immediately had a problem with this model, mm-hmm. that you would end up with jerks who had high performance and high potential that were impossible to work with, that made it hard to keep the other people who didn't have a chance to grow, maybe because the jerks were sucking up all the oxygen in the room. So you've got to include,
they're brilliant, but they tear down the rest of the team, right?
Which is not acceptable, right? So how well do they work with other people? Do they collaborate? Do they have a good internal network? Are there other organizations they could go to internally, right, within our own organization, within our company? Would a team be led by them, even if temporarily, if they were given a project, right? There are more and more companies going to project-based organizations, matrix-like feeling organizations. Trust me, folks, in 30 years, we'll go away from that. But that's a way. Look, if somebody didn't have people skills and they're in a matrix organization, they're doomed. You're doomed, okay? That's the dark mark for you. Dude, you're doomed. Just give it up right now. You got bad people skills and you're in a matrix, you're dead.
You're done. You're done.
And look, folks, you don't have to worry over much about what the format is going to be with each one of your directs or what the precise format is. Again, don't prepare a 17-page PowerPoint presentation. People will slave over it. They'll stay late at night worrying about the data, worrying about the details in a way that won't be helpful, won't be developing you or them. As long as you don't make the process or format something that takes hour of prep for and causing that time to be taken from the thinking we want them doing about the three P's, a simple, straightforward process is probably best. There's nothing wrong with a standard format. If you want to come up with that, that's fine. But don't make the format a burden, okay? And by the way, when you make it a standalone meeting, you're going to start thinking about creating a format for the meeting, right? Let's make it as efficient as possible for each one of them to talk to me about their folks. Look, folks, if you want, do what we've done and, you know, ask them to brief you the first time. Ask everyone to do what works for them. Once everyone's taking you through all their folks, decide which format worked best for you as the listener, as the learner, in terms of ease of reception and quality of information, and then ask everybody to conform to that one and say, listen, I really appreciate the input. One of you did a really great job. I want to give some positive, you know, I want to praise Joe. And then, by the way, you'll give Joe some positive feedback later and say, this is a really simple, very direct way. Try to keep it simple. You know, I really appreciate Joe came up with this format. This is the format I want everybody to use. You don't need to go talk to Joe about it because it's no more complex than this. These are the questions Joe asked himself. Here's what Joe's briefing looked like. You don't need to have it typed and printed out. I'll take notes and so on. We're going to do this once a quarter going forward. And then again, ask everybody to conform to that particular one and then take Joe aside and give him some positive feedback. The more complex you make this, the more time will be spent on the briefing and the less time will be spent thinking about the skip levels, the directs of your directs, which is the whole point of this. And you want this to become part of your operational DNA. I've tried to avoid saying making things part of your DNA, but that's a common way that people talk about turning something that's episodic into something that's routine.
Yeah, you couldn't handle it, right? Just finally yeah. Comes out. You've been wanting to say it, and here you go.
Yes, all along.
Right, okay. So now we've done all that, and now we're recommending. Like once you've built a base of knowledge, you've been doing this for a while, then you don't need to do it bi-monthly, and once a quarterly is fine.
Yeah. Do you even have to do it bi-monthly? We're recommending it. We recommend you start with that. What we found is you're not going to get through everyone in one session. If you spend a few minutes asking questions about each one based on our guidance, please, whatever you do, folks, don't give them a general overview and then listen to them give a briefing and don't ask any questions and don't take any notes. This is not just supposed to flow over you. You're not bathing in a stream here, okay? You got to take notes. You got to ask questions. And you've never done this before, and so you're going to learn how to do it the first couple of times you do it. At the first meeting, get through whom you can of your skips. The next week, pick up where you left off and continue until you're done. Some people are going to be more loquacious, and so it's going to take a little bit longer. That's okay. Don't burden them with having to get a process exactly right the first time. And again, make their thinking about the process and not about the content, which is the caliber, the three P's related to their directs. Now, look, some of you are listening and you're thinking, wait, I'm going to take 3 or maybe 4 weeks to do this. And then because 2 months have gone by, it's been another month since I had the last meeting, I have to start over? The answer is no, you really don't. When you're done, do it again 2 months after the last session, right? So when we say bi-monthly, we don't mean bi-monthly from the start. We mean bi-monthly from the end. And then go to once a quarter. If you only do it once a quarter to begin with, we've learned that managers feel like I forget about it, right? It's like going to monthly meetings. People tell us all the time they go to monthly meetings and they don't do anything for 29 days. And the day before the meeting, they get ready for the meeting. And then the moment that meeting's done, they put it away and they wait for another month. And stuff doesn't get done because it's not on the front burner. We know you can't be talking about your skips in every single one of your weekly one-on-ones, but it ought to become a standard part of how you talk to your directs about their directs. And if you do it bi-monthly, in other words, have 2 months between each of the sets of meetings, and you're doing it on a regular basis with all of your skips, in the course of 6 or 8 months, at the most, you're going to have a good baseline knowledge of everybody who reports to your directs. And then you can say, all right, let's do this as a standard once a quarter. Maybe what we'll do is let's say we start in January, we start the year in January. We just finished reviews at the end of the calendar year. And so in January, we start, and January and February and March, we don't do this. But at the end of March, I say, okay, look, let's start doing our three P's review of all of our directs, all of our skips. We're going to start doing that. And maybe it takes us 2 or 3 weeks in March to get through it. And then you don't think about it again until, let's see, March, April, May. You don't think about it oh, April, May, June. You don't think about it till the end of June. And you do it again at the end of June. You spend some time in July doing it. And then you've got July, August, September. And so you do it again at the start of October. And then you're going to do it again at the beginning of the year. This will make you so much better managing all of the talent in your organization. And by the way, if you're five levels up in the organization, you're going to be expecting this from your directs for them to be doing it with their directs, right? You're going to expect them to be doing these quarterly reviews as well. You've got to know more than the talent of the people who report directly to you when you have skips. It's as simple as that. The thing is, what we want to be careful of is you start it once every 3 months or once every 4 or 5 months. You don't want this to be a horseman's Christmas rule effect where you never get good at it because it's always kind of episodic. If you do it 2 months after your last session, your managers and you will get much better at this much faster than if you only do it quarterly initially, or even worse, once every 6 months initially. Don't think, oh, I have to do a mid-level review and then mid-year review and I've got an end-of-year review, so let's do the skip level thing only twice a year, because again, it'll become episodic. At some point, you're going to be able to run through all of any one of your managers directs, in other words, your skips, in one longish, maybe it's 45 minutes, maybe it's an hour, one-on-one, if you pay attention to tightening the process as you go through it, and you don't have to feel like you're reinventing the wheel every time. I know this is a really bad analogy, but I was telling Drake the other day, he's learning how to drive. And I said to him, I was sitting in the front seat, and I'm sure some people would laugh at me for saying these kind of things, but I said, dude, you know how you get good at something? You know how you get good at doing something? You do it, right? Obviously, what we're talking about for you guys as managers is way more important than my son driving, but we ought to be good at assessing our managers and their directs. And by the way, by definition, when you're assessing your skips, you're assessing your manager's ability to develop and grow those skips, right? And this is the process that will both help you get good at it and then going forward, be good at it as well. And it'll prepare you to be an executive. Simple as that. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
So cover your skips bi-monthly and one-on-ones going forward. Add an extra 30 minutes if you need to a one-on-one because you're too far down in the weeds. We respect that. You don't really need to. You can just give up your 15 minutes and start it during that time. There are three things you want to talk about: performance, potential, and people skills. That's an easy thing that we're going to apply to a lot more situations, folks. And go to quarterly once you've built a solid base of knowledge and you feel like the process is pretty simple and nobody thinks about the process anymore. All they're doing is thinking about the content. Fact is, we got to learn about our skips. We have to not only develop our own team's succession planning, we also have to develop our directs as managers. And that means teaching them to be thinking on a regular basis about the strengths and weaknesses and potential and people skills of the people who report to them. All right. Thinking about performance and potential and of course, risk and the kind of people skills that people have is what managers do. And they have to learn how to do it from somebody. And if you're a manager, that would be you.
That would be you. Thanks, my friend.
My pleasure, partner.
We'll see you. Thanks, everyone. That's it. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you all next week. Meantime, have a great one. So long.